More millionaires are made during accelerated changes in the economy, during recessions and depression and accelerate more margins. And it's because the entrepreneur or investor, or even the collaborator, they're looking at the market and how it's aligned, synergistic, or supplementary to your skills, knowledge, and desire. The market makers, which is a secret sauce, but also the most common sense one, they're actually studying the margins, saying, wow, this area is so oversold that the margins are going to be so much better by investing my money into this thing because it's so oversold than this other thing, or working in this industry instead of this industry because the margins are there.
Alan has started and grown several multi-million dollar businesses. His mission is to help you do the same. Welcome to the Business Growth Pod, building the future one entrepreneur at a time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm Alan. I'm a family man, an attorney, and an entrepreneur. Each week, we provide resources and advice to help build your business. Are you ready? Then let's go. Hey everyone, welcome to the Business Growth Pod. I'm your host, Alan Draper. I'm very excited to introduce David Meltzer. David is a speaker, author, sports executive, investor, and entrepreneur. He's actually been on the show before, and we're excited to have him back. So good to see you. Welcome back, David.
Well, it's great to be back and just excited to share kind of where we've grown to, and what a better place to do it than your podcast.
All right. I appreciate it. So David, I've been thinking a lot about the economy, a lot about the talking heads and, you know, the use of the word recession. And I was kind of wondering where your head's at, where your thoughts are, where you're spending your time and resources in the next 6 to 12 months, and what you're going to be focused on.
That's a great point. And in fact, I created a group to take advantage of where we're going in the next 6 months, because I've lived through expedited downturns in the market in certain industries, careers, jobs, et cetera, in 93, 99, got killed in 2008, lost over $100 million and went bankrupt. So what I wanted to do is pay back the dummy tax that I've paid. And I wanted to pay it back by teaching people to focus in on three things. And the first is, we need to pay attention and intention into the markets, the different markets that do well, that are synergistic and supplementary to our skills, our knowledge, and our desire. And if we can study the markets, the jobs, the industries, the careers, to see how aligned, how our skills, knowledge, and desire are supplementary to what's doing well in those markets, and what opportunities, options, and touches of favor exist during expedited changes in the economy, either good or bad, by the way. When we get these accelerated changes, that's when we want to look and study the markets. Then secondly, we want to study something that a lot of people glance over or never even raise their awareness to. It's the market makers. You see, if we know who's making the market, so for example, in 2008, if I understood subprime lenders were making the market when it came to the real estate market, I could have changed my strategy and I would have bought differently in different timing and different risk tolerance, knowing the market makers. And doesn't take that much effort to find the market makers, but most people gloss over it and don't do that, including me, over the last three accelerated changes in the economy. Then finally, and this one seems obvious, Alan, but so many people don't pay attention to this even when there's not an accelerated change in the economy. And that's called margins. See, so many people get so busy working, they forget to make money. And they invest in things that even if they work out, they haven't fully thought through what the margins are going to be like. And in accelerated changes in the economy, downturns or upturns, the margins of millionaires are made. More millionaires are made during accelerated changes in the economy, during recessions and depressions and accelerate more margins. And it's because the entrepreneur or investor, or even the collaborator, they're looking at the market and how it's aligned, synergistic, or supplementary to your skills, knowledge, and desire. The market makers, which is a secret sauce, but also the most common sense one, they're actually studying the margins, saying, wow, this area is so oversold that the margins are going to be so much better by investing my money into this thing because it's so oversold than this other thing, or working in this industry instead of this industry because the margins are there.
Yeah, 100%. The other day I posted a poll on my Instagram, just kind of getting a feel for where people are at. And, you know, the overwhelming majority mentioned that they are not going to be buying any real estate or any other assets until they figure out what's going on, which is a little different from my approach. I've noticed that, you know, when people are nervous, they stop investing, right? It seems to be the inverse for what I do. When things are going down, that's when I see a for sale sign on, you know, real estate, stocks, even businesses, acquiring new businesses. And but the average person sees that, they get afraid, right? And they wait for the upturn and they buy when things are really high. And what would you say to that person that is afraid right now of embracing the opportunity that we're going to be seeing in the next 6 to 12 months and just kind of getting that confidence to invest?
Well, I think you're nailing the nail on the head, my friend. See, the problem with most people is they don't know their timing and risk tolerance. See, upturns and downturns have nothing to do with investment. Your timing and risk tolerance is everything. And I think there's more opportunity when everybody gets afraid because there's less competition with things that are aligned with my timing and risk tolerance, whether it's stocks or real estate. It doesn't matter where I am on the upturn or the downturn. I'm analyzing only one thing in all investments that I make. Is this aligned with my timing and risk tolerance? And if so, then I'm going to go ahead and invest. And, you know, each individual investment has its own criteria. It has its own elements that can align with what I'm looking for in an investment. Now, when I tell you that, let me show you how this works. Number one, the lottery. I know the lottery is $2 investment. I know it has a 1 in 1 billion chance of winning. And I know I could win $1 billion. And I also know that the timing is this Saturday at 8 p.m. So this Saturday at 8 p.m., after I bought my one lottery ticket for $2 and I invariably lose and I have not won the $500 million yet, I've done a timing and risk tolerance assessment comparatively with my values to say, hey, I get so much joy and excitement and fun out of $2 that I am happy when I lose, because I got what I wanted out of it. It was aligned. I see the same thing. I coach people in the crypto market. I saw kids buy crypto at 10 cents. They sold out at $3. And then it went to $10 and they were all pissed off. And they're like, I'm so stupid. This is a horrible investment. But I'm like, no, this was a terrific investment. In fact, if every investment worked out at 3,000 times your earning, your investment, you're going to be a very rich person, but you're going to be miserable if you don't know your timing and risk tolerance so that you can enjoy it. Right? So know your timing and risk tolerance. There's going to be less competition for the deals that are aligned with your timing and risk tolerance. It has nothing to do with the market that you're investing in. Just whatever you want investment, know your timing and risk tolerance.
Yeah, I love this. I love this idea. And I, you know, a lot of times people will ask me, well, where's the peak and where's the bottom? It's like, well, I don't have a crystal ball, right? But what I do is I try to buy the downslope, right? So I'll start, you know, buying as I think I see things go down. And the market, the stock market has bounced back this week. We've had a couple of good days. But as things are going down, I continue to buy them. And then that's how I find the bottom. But for me, it's putting myself in a position where mentally I understand the risk I'm taking and understanding that there's always opportunity out there. Right. I think the average person, David, thinks that there's only a limited amount of opportunity. And so I think this comes back to the mental aspect of it, right? Of envisioning what you want to achieve. And then your mind starts to see that opportunity naturally. Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. And I had it, you know, even after losing everything and initially in a fear-based consciousness, telling myself, I'm never going to own any more real estate because I had a ski mountain, a golf course. I didn't understand what banks could do. And I thought I had more equity than I did and could leverage that. A whole bunch of mistakes, but lessons that I've learned. But in that same vein, I bought a beach house and everyone thought I was an idiot. I mean, it was 7 years ago. Right. I'm coming off of a bankruptcy, you know, it was about 14 years ago, 2008 now, 14 years ago. So here I am just 7 years later buying a multi-million dollar beach property. And it was $100,000 over what anyone else had ever paid 7 years ago. Now, I did not listen. It was aligned with my timing and risk tolerance. I knew, you know, for the market, what that market would bear. Nothing had sold within 3 years. I knew the market makers were changing, that there was going to be short-term rentals, VRBO and Airbnb, which would give the property a different value and different income for me. And I also knew the margins were extraordinary. And I knew, you know, for 20 years, the history of what was going on. So it was completely aligned with my time and risk tolerance. Meanwhile, you know, that property has tripled. You know, it has done far better on the income side where I never get to use it because I'd rather stay at the Montage, you know, and make double what I'm paying at the Montage for staying at the Montage for a vacation than using my own beach house. You know, so there's a lot there, but everyone thought I was stupid. You know, they thought the market had gone up for seven straight years, that there never had been, and there still hasn't been an economy that's run this hot for this long. So as long as you stick to, like you said, your own criteria, you know, I love the idea of buying down, right? A market always grows. It's just a matter of time. So if, for example, you're buying on the down, eventually it'll equal to or greater where you were from the down. And so you're guaranteed a margin if it's aligned with your timing. And in real estate, I use a 20-year fluctuation. So my timing and risk tolerance is, okay, what's the worst it's going to be in 20 years? Because if you look historically, you know, 20 years is the longest cycle that you're going to get and you're going to end up okay. You're going to be at least back to where you were with real estate. And as long as you break even on real estate, you've won because of all the tax benefits, the asset-based lending and income that's available.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that I've noticed that you talk quite a bit about, David, is rejection. And I think you can apply some of those principles to the current market and things that are going on, because I think people are afraid to take steps to try new things, to learn new things, because they're afraid of rejection. But you talk very passionately about it. You talk passionately about how each no gets you closer to a yes. And what is it that allows you? I don't know that you get rejected much at this stage of life. Maybe you do. But what is it that allows you to keep that optimism in the face of so many no's?
Open-minded and open-hearted and open-handed community, meaning that a no gives you an indication that you're dealing with a closed mind. So if you're able, if you're credible, you have an emotional attachment to what you do, you talk about passion, but also have a capability of articulating a quantitative value to exceed what you're asking for, then what you want to do is create a community of sponsors, people that will help you, and know people that can help you. So power sponsors and sponsors. And the way that we do that is we want to qualify people, whether they have an open mind or a closed mind. So if I'm trying to create an initial sharing of a vision and you give me a no, well, you're just pushing me towards someone that has an open mind, because it takes 1,000 times the effort to re-engineer a closed mind than an open one. There's so much reach in person on the phone, via email, traditional and social media. We have so much reach of so many people that we're better off just qualifying people by having an open mind first. When we find an open mind, then we can continue to ask open-ended questions that say, hey, would it help you if? What are you doing today? What do you like about it? What don't you like it? What do you help you with? Then you can ask, do you know anyone that can help me? And now you're building that community of sponsors and power sponsors with a simple open-ended question template. I give this template out. I've made millionaires out of this template and applicable to every single industry. Email me. You're going to put it in the notes, david@dmelcher.com. Now, this open-mindedness. Now, I also incorporate a three no rule, a three rejection rule. Let's say you and I come to a mutual accord and you said you're interested. Now, if we set a date for the next phone call or we create a go, no-go plan on what our next steps are, and you don't show up or you don't answer, you tell me not now, I go ahead and use a three no rule that puts me back again and say, well, okay, I'll call you back again. You give me another no. On the third no, when you've already shared a vision with me and expressed interest, I now tell you, hey, this obviously isn't the right time. Let me know when it is. And the reason I do that is that, you know, everyone has an open mind at a certain time. Some people have, like you and I, open minds the majority of the time. We're easily sold. Some people have closed minds the majority of the time. But sometimes we catch someone with a closed mind at a time when they have an open one, and then they're going to be a lot more work. And if we use the three no rule, then we can go ahead and they'll never call us back if they have a closed mind. Although sometimes you get a person with an open mind and they're having a bad day, right? You know, something happened, your tire blew, or who knows, you know, something with their family. People get COVID nowadays, which is a classic example of someone with an open mind. All of a sudden will have a very closed mind if they're exhausted and sick or worried about a family member. So three no rule, then 50% of the time, an open mind will go ahead when you walk away, they'll come back. So not only are you expediting the sales cycle by putting a catalyst on the open mind, but you're also getting rid of the people that are never going to say yes to you, the closed-minded people. And that's more valuable, I think, than accelerating the sales cycle of an open mind that eventually will do business with you or share your vision again. The more valuable one is I'm not wasting my time with people that are never going to share a vision with me.
Yeah. You know, one of my goals this year, David, was to have 100 identifiable rejections, professional rejections.
Not for over. Never limit yourself. I always say I want over 100.
Over 100. And I've learned that there's so much benefit that comes from it. And I actually got to the point, I shared this on my social media probably 3 months ago. I realized that the benefit that comes from rejection and kind of getting through that rejection is greater than the benefit that you would have received had you never been rejected in the first place. And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, I think for me personally, a lot of my journey is, what is Alan learning about Alan? What is Alan learning about what he's capable of? And there's nothing like rejection to show, you know, a magnifying glass on that, right? And, you know, I agree with you 100%. About rejection.
Yeah, I also love the line, you know, I'm learning when I get rejected, I'm learning to live with myself instead of lie to myself.
Excellent. Yeah, that's perfect. I mean, I think the journey is, you know, us becoming, right? I think we set goals for ourselves. And what it really comes down to is, are we the types of people that deserve in the marketplace those goals? Right? Are we the type of people that are able to achieve those goals? And I've learned with my businesses that they are inherently limited by the development, the personal stage that I'm at. For example, I cannot grow a company to a level that I'm not personally at. And so as I progress, I'm able to do that. You know, you mentioned that you don't put time restrictions on goals. And I'm very fascinated by this idea. And this is kind of going to be our last thought as we're wrapping up here, David. Tell me a little bit about that and why you do it and how it helps you achieve your goals or objectives in the long run anyway.
Yes, I'm glad that you asked me that, because this was the one area that Bob Proctor, my mentor, who had passed away this year, we were in disagreement, but he finally, I think, finally came over to the dark side, to my side of timelessness, of infinity. So I don't believe in putting a time limit of, you know, I want to make $1 million by the end of this year. And the reason I believe that is that the minute I determine that I want to make $1 million by the end of this year, every second that passes by that I haven't made that $1 million, I'm creating resistance for myself. I'm running out of time. And what I like to do is look at the world as a value add world, as an infinite world, a timeless world, an effortless world. And so I work within the context of velocity, not time. See, time is a man-made construct. It determines the length of the start or cause to an outcome. And the biggest misuse of time is between cause and an outcome, cause and effect, or problem and solution. So I take it out of that realm by saying, I'm going to make as much money as I can, as fast as I can. Or if I get a little bit more quantitative, I want to double the amount of money I make as fast as I can. This is limitless. You see, I am encouraged by not only math, but the universe. When I say I'm going to double the amount of money I make as fast as I can, every second that ticks by, I'm getting better and closer to my objective instead of less and less time to achieve it. I'm creating less resistance. It's more effortless. It's more in the context of I am happy, healthy, wealthy, and worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? Instead of most people searching for a why of I want to get more happy, more healthy, more wealthy, and more worthy. That actually is resistance, creating void, shortages, and obstacles of something that's already there. I already work in an infinite world of saying, this already exists. What am I doing to interfere with it? So I'm trying to create velocity, not limit myself by time.
Wow. That's deep. Very well said. Well, I appreciate your time today, David. You know, I look up to you a lot and just wish you nothing but the best in your future.
Thank you, everyone. Please reach out to me if you need help, david@dmeltzer.com. I'll be back for my third time. Don't worry.
All right. Can't wait. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
If you've enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a rating. And for daily inspiration and business tips, follow Alan on Instagram. Until next time, remember, we build the future one entrepreneur at a time.